Welcome into a new episode, last one of the week of Locked On Knicks. Gavin Shaw, Alex Wolf with you once again, joined by friend of the pod, JB, Jeffrey Ballone. He runs the site Daily Knicks, part of the Fansided Network, and he's a contributor for the Strict.land, does great work there as well. Has a great piece coming up, Alex, that he talks about in this one. But first, we had to have a Chris Paul truther on the podcast. And JB is a very sane, very nuanced version of that. He makes the case for the Knicks going and getting Chris Paul.
Yeah, and he's got a really interesting viewpoint on it that, you know, basically is that the Knicks should start trying to get better sooner than later. And that might mean, you know, tying up the cap space with Chris Paul and sort of seeing where that takes them. And that's totally cool. And it was a really good discussion. We sort of had the debate of, you know, tanking versus not tanking. And JB sort of made the argument that when you look around the league, that you see a lot of teams that are competing right now that aren't built around players that they themselves drafted in the top five. And, you know, that maybe this whole homegrown philosophy is sort of a fallacy in a way, in that, you know, you can become a better team even with picks, you know, in the 8 to 15 range if you just scout well. So there's a ton of really, really thought-provoking discussion. And then we finish off the episode just talking a little bit about Kenny Wooten, who has become the new king of Knicks Twitter in a very short amount of time by just being an overall cool dude. So we finish off talking about that next on Locked On Knicks.
You are Locked On Knicks, your daily New York Knicks podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
And I think we see Willis coming out. There he comes right now.
Starts with the five. Ewing for the win. Yes.
Thompson cuts left. Now fires a three.
He's good. And he's fouled. It's tough. And he makes it. Anthony for three.
Yeah, I'm with that for sure. I think, we need some Knicks basketball in our lives. JB, but before we let you go, we need to talk a little Chris Paul. And I know you did like a 2-hour opus on it with our friends at Brooklyn, which was great. Yep. Everyone should go check it out. I just listened to the first hour and 15 minutes or so while eating dinner. I think you made some compelling points throughout, and we've had a variety of opinions. We had Macri on, and he was sort of like, I could see it either way in terms of trading for Chris Paul. And then we had PD on earlier this week, and we didn't explicitly talk about trading for Chris, but his stance was very clear. Take the guy in his mind, Patrick Williams, with the highest upside in this year's draft. And then next year's draft is generational, like arguably the best of this decade. There's 8 or 9 guys allegedly who could change your franchise. And because of that, it's worth being as bad as possible. But I'd like to hear the argument, because we haven't really heard it in full form on this podcast for acquiring Chris Paul.
All right. Yeah. So I think a couple of things, and it sort of links to what we were talking about before in terms of where these young players fit on the roster. I think that it's important to see, you know, it's one thing about, okay, you have a bunch of just young guys and you play them a bunch of minutes and somehow slowly by doing that, they develop, which to me, I feel like is sort of summarizes the discussion that we as Knicks fans have had on Twitter, you know, dating back to Jeff Hornacek, of just give the young players opportunities to play. Don't play them in stupid lineups and we'll be happy. Like it's really been kind of that simple, right? And to me, adding a player like Chris Paul sort of takes that point with steroids. It says, well, you're gonna put a competent playmaker who to me doesn't get in the way of, I mean, maybe you could argue if you want to say Dennis Smith Jr. should be the starting point guard or even Frank. But to me, I don't see either Frank or Dennis Smith Jr. being that role. So to me, he doesn't get in the way. Paul doesn't get in the way of any of the young players on the roster. He only helps complement them. He gives Mitch a perfect lob partner, pick and roll partner. He takes some of the playmaking responsibilities away from Barrett. but he also, I think, gives them more versatility in how they can use Barrett. And then I think the biggest thing is it creates, you know, we're talking about, well, how are the Knicks going to become a team that doesn't just build through the draft, but also builds through free agency or trade? Well, to do those other two avenues, free agency and trade, I think you need to do a better job of creating an environment where the players on your roster are more attractive to others. I think it's, we just talked about RJ Barrett. I mean, he didn't make either of the all rookie teams and he finished eighth in rookie of the year voting. Why? Because he was on a terrible Knicks team. If RJ Barrett had the exact same season he had, but he was playing on the Miami Heat, he would definitely get votes. He would probably be on the first team for the all rookie team. Like, you, it's just very hard when you're a team that everyone considers a dumpster fire to then create a perception that the players playing within that dumpster fire are worth any value, unless they're literally like doing, you know, insane, incredible things, which we've seen none of them are doing. So, and then I guess to the free agent point, it's, well, maybe not this summer, but even if you're talking a summer down the road, you have to eventually kind of create this blueprint of you can come to the Knicks, even under Dolan, and you can find a way to build a competitive team. Something that, granted, they did shortly with Melo, but it's been a long time now. I mean, that was 7 years ago. So I guess that's kind of trying to summarize, you know, that two-hour conversation. But it's just, I think we spend too much time looking at the way you build a team is through drafting players in a lottery and then developing them. And we forget there are two other components, trade and free agency. And I think both of those aspects are helped when you have a more competitive team, which is what I think Paul would give them.
Yeah, and to your point, and I've come around on this because I was sort of originally like team tank at all costs, and that's long been my philosophy on just the best way to build up a basketball team. And obviously, you look at the teams that are great in the NBA. I mean, the Celtics had the Nets tank for them by proxy, but for the most part, I mean, that's not how these teams got there. And then, I mean, and I guess the flip side of that argument is you're saying, well, if a Cade Cunningham type guy is Luka Doncic, that sets you up in a way, in a sustainable way that's almost impossible to achieve in any other way outside of consistently having organizational intelligence that just supersedes the vast majority of the league. And I think of the Heat as a team like that. The Spurs for the longest time were a team like that. But even the Spurs started up with Duncan. The point being, there are multiple ways to build up to being great, and I accept that, and I don't think you can fixate on anyone. That being said, I don't think the idea of not acquiring Chris Paul and also pursuing multiple avenues to be great are mutually exclusive, and I think by not acquiring Chris Paul, and I know the argument on the other pod was, well, you have Fred VanVleet who can do a lot of the same stuff but isn't going to make you so good that it takes you out of the lot. The lottery conversation, and that's the idea that Drew and Schwinney had as kind of a principled middle ground. And this might be a long-winded way of saying I'm pretty neutral on it, because just from a pure perspective of someone who has to watch every Knick game, I would love for them to be great. I would love Chris Paul would represent, I mean, maybe even at 35, the best player that has been on the Knicks since I was cognizant enough to realize what was going on when I was watching the games. I think my argument would be, I think it's worth it for me to wait one more year. And if this draft is, and the issue for me is like, it's just very, very hard to gauge a year out. Like, are there really nine guys who can change your luck as a franchise? Because that's what we were getting from PD, someone who knows like way, way, way more about this stuff than I do. And when I hear that, I'm thinking, okay, then you just have to do it. You just have to make sure you get a top eight or nine pick. And as I've talked about in this pod, I still don't necessarily believe getting Chris Paul precludes you from that happening. I mean, given right. the revised lottery odds and the fact that like the Knicks just, I mean, I think if you just look at the rest of the league, like there's just not really, I mean, maybe if they also get someone like Gallinari, but in all likelihood, there's just not a scenario where they're all that good, even with Paul. And I would expect Paul, and this was another factor you guys mentioned, to probably have a less healthy year, because this year was abnormally healthy and maybe could be credited to his vegan diet. But I don't know how sustainable that is. Like, I think odds are he misses 20 or 30 games next season. And the fact of the matter is, like, even if he is like one of the 10 smartest players of all time, even if he's one of the 20 or 30 most skillful players in NBA history, like, the guy at some point is going to have some modicum of drop off. And if you were the Knicks, I would almost be hoping for a little bit, to the point of Schwinn and Drew, that he's not so good still that he could make them a 45 win team, but he's just good enough that he could make them a 38 win team while creating an environment that's far more conducive to the success of the guys around him, which I think is your whole argument, JB. And I think to your point, he does that in a way that Fred VanVleet can't, because he's Chris fucking Paul, and that's what he does. And that was a long-winded way to say, similar to Macri, I'm very much on the fence about this, yeah. But I don't like when people dismiss the argument out of hand, because I think even just beyond like my selfish desires to enjoy watching the Knicks next year, I think there are very real arguments that you've made in terms of legitimacy and striking a balance between improving the guys on the roster and still being in contention to get someone who's really, really good next season.
Yeah, and I think the only other point, I guess, that I keep bringing up related to that is, I think people just overlook, as fans, the only thing we can see that's transparent to us is lottery odds. So we just say, hey, get the best lottery odds. The higher you pick up the board, the less likely your team can mess up the pick, because it becomes more of a consensus on who to pick, usually, as you get to the top of the board. So you don't have to rely on your team really being smart or anything like that. And for a long time, we haven't relied on the Knicks to be that way. But, you know, maybe now with, you know, adding guys like Walt Perrin, and they've added more than that to their scouting, you know, group with Alex Klein and others, maybe we can rely on that more. And I think we just don't know. I mean, the Knicks have 3 picks in the top 38 this year. And like you alluded to, there's the teams we're seeing now, like Denver, a perfect example, right? They're not a team that relied on a top 5 pick or ticked or finished at the top of the lottery in the perfect year. They just drafted well. And I think that's the part, as fans, we just sort of gloss over of just, you know, what's wrong with hoping the team is better? But, and then they still build through the draft, because you just make competent picks like good teams do when you have your picks. If you hit on your 8th pick, I mean, guaranteed, let's put it this way. If you get Chris Paul and for some reason you pick 13th instead of 5th, there is a chance that you could find someone at 13 that ends up being better than the guy at 5th. Or even this year, you pick 8th. There is a good chance, we've seen it every single draft, that there's going to be a on the board at 8 that 5 years from now we're going to say, wow, that guy was a really good pick, he should have been higher. It's up to your scouting department to find that player. And I guess to go on a long-winded thing myself, but I'll give a preview to a Strickland piece I'm writing. And I told you, Alex, I was working on this. I went through all of the teams since 2016, so over the last 5 years, who have had the most success in terms of both regular season wins and playoff wins. And I looked at their rosters to identify how many of them had their own top 5 picks included on the roster within any of those 5 years, but also those players were all-stars. Meaning, like, Tim Duncan was technically part of the Spurs roster in 2015-16, but he wasn't, and obviously he's an older player, wasn't an all-star. And when you do that and you look at the top 15 teams, if you take the Celtics sort of off the board for a second, because like you said, they acquired those lottery picks from a trade, you basically have Golden State did not have one player who's their own top 5 pick on their roster in that entire dynasty run. Toronto, the only top 5 pick they had was Valanciunas. Obviously, he was not a difference maker. You then have Houston. They did not have one of their own top 5 picks. Milwaukee Bucks, they had Jabari Parker, obviously not fundamental to the rebuild. So the only ones you have is Cleveland, because they had LeBron James and Kyrie Irving and even Tristan Thompson. Oklahoma City between Westbrook and Durant. And then Miami Heat, it's sort of weird because this current iteration doesn't have any, but they did at the tail end of the Wade run. But then you got the Spurs, the Nuggets, the Clippers with Blake Griffin was at the tail end of that. The Blazers, none. Utah Jazz, Dante Exum, but again, not an all-star, not fundamental to the team. The Lakers, Russell Ingram, Ball. I know they used them to get Anthony Davis, but they, again, not fundamental to their new success. And then the Sixers are the obvious one everyone points to. So you're literally looking at it, those 15 teams, and if you take the Celtics away, and if the Heat, you don't count Wade because that was really just one season of this last five. I mean, you're talking three teams, Cleveland, Oklahoma City, and Philly, of the top teams who have their own top five pick who are fundamental to their success. So for the Knicks to say, we're going to build a team that's going to be reliant on our own top five lottery picks turning us into contenders, that you would actually be the anomaly. You wouldn't be following how any of the other successful franchises have done it. Everyone, I think, falls in love with, you get that one generational guy like LeBron James and it changes the whole franchise. But that just happens so infrequently, it's hard to count on it, which is why the teams that are usually good for long periods of time, they do it without the benefit of a top five pick, or they get someone else's top five pick through free agency or trade. So, you know, again, long-winded answer, and I guess I'm given the whole spiel of what my story will be, but it's just, I think sometimes we overemphasize how important it is to land a top five pick as the catapult to turn you into a contender, when we're looking across the league right now, the dynasty that just ended, Golden State, Toronto, who just won the championship last year, and now this year we're seeing resurgence from teams like Denver, they have not done that. That's not how the top teams have done it. But it just seems to me that that aspect sort of gets glossed over because people see a team like, say, Philadelphia, who, you know, who did tank and obviously got better out of a result of it. But, you know, it just, I guess, gives some empirical data to show, you know, you can build a contender without getting a top five pick. So maybe if we don't get one in 2021, it is not the end of the world.
Yeah, I'm certainly on board with that. I mean, I will say too, with Philly, it's sort of interesting to look at that Philly sort of drafted with it. I feel like we're going to look back like years from now and be like, the process years were like some of the most bizarre years from like a team in sports, because I mean, they drafted all these players that wound up actually being quite talented, but I mean, they strictly went best player available by their board, as evidenced by the fact that they drafted three centers in the top. I guess Noel technically was taken with the sixth pick, so it wasn't the top five, but the top six in, you know, a number of years. And they drafted Simmons and Embiid and Noel, all assuming that they were not going to play for their whole rookie season, so they could tank again and try to get, you know, a top pick again the year after. And it's sort of worked in a way, but then we're also sort of in this weird position where now all those guys have to get paid and they're not perfect. And, you know, now the Sixers are sort of in cap hell. And there's already talk now that, you know, after spending big money on Al Horford last year and thinking that they were, you know, they traded Jimmy Butler for Josh Richardson, you know, because Butler wanted to leave anyway, but they managed to get, you know, Richardson back and then, you know, re-signed Tobias Harris, all that. People were looking at it and being like, oh, you know, maybe the Sixers are ready to make this happen. And they're not. It's just, it's not happening. You know, so it's definitely not a foolproof strategy. I think like lately I've been sort of coming around on the strategy that PD sort of outlined during our episode, which is, and here's my reasoning behind it. And it's like purely, it's like almost like selfish reasoning in a way. I think my biggest thing with this next coming season, I don't see any way logistically with how the NBA is talking right now, how they could possibly get out more than a 40-game regular season next year. I mean, they're saying that the season's likely not going to start until at least January, if not later.
Right.
You know, and if you look at the season, the last lockout shortened season that we had to start on Christmas, they managed to get that. That was, what, 55 games or something like that they managed to get in. You know, so if you're starting midway through January, that already knocks out 3 weeks of potential basketball time. So you're probably looking at like a 40-game schedule, unless you want to, especially with how rest is viewed around the league and stuff now too, and you'll probably have a shorter training camp and all this other stuff. I don't think you're going to want to have back-to-back-to-backs or anything like that. So my kind of view on it at this point is just like, from a Knicks fan pain perspective, it's like, you know, I guess a normal Knicks regular season is like sitting and being stabbed with a bunch of small things on your face and having it hurt like crazy and having no way to escape for a long time. Whereas I feel like a short little 40-game tanking season with a new coach where they play a bunch of the kids heavily, probably lose a bunch of games, but we see some sort of improvement from them, would be more like a quick punch to the face, you know, rather than this like slow,
yeah,
painful.
No, that makes sense.
The right. Slow, that's painful awesome. Death that we have every year. So I think that's why I'm sort of on board now with this idea of just sort of like, if next year's draft is actually that generational and like we're going to get what's kind of cool about it is if everything goes according to plan, we're going to get a really good idea of just how realistic this could be with this rumored tournament that the NBA is trying to get together with the G League. What do they call it? The G League Elite Team? Is that what they call the high school one? But at any rate, the new high school, you know, high school to pros G League, yep, path team.
Right.
They're trying to set up a tournament for them so that those players can be featured and still get some tape out there and stuff. They'll be playing with other, as of right now, the plan was undrafted players from this draft and just some other G League players in general. I personally think it'd be really cool if they found a way to pull this tournament off and just push the draft, the 2020 draft back a little further and say, hey, we'll cut you guys a contract to come play here if you want to improve your draft stock. You know, we'll pay you for your efforts to come here and put on a good performance, and you could potentially get yourself drafted, you know, a whole round higher if you really show out. But that's just me. But at any rate, they're thinking about getting this whole thing set up, you know, so we're going to get a good look at some of these players before the Knicks season even starts. But if I'm watching and I'm like, all right, Jalen Green and Jonathan Kuminga and, you know, a lot of these guys that signed up for the G League path are this legit. You know, we don't even get to see Cade Cunningham yet, who's supposed to be the best of them. I think it might be worth it to me to say, okay, like, why don't we just not tie up our books into Chris Paul for the next 2 years, making $45 million a year, leave the options open a little more, you know, and then even if you don't hit a big free agent in next year's free agent class, you're now rocking with a core of, like, you know, whoever your top pick is, which, you know, hopefully it would be Cunningham, but maybe it could also be Kuminga or Jalen Green or any one of a number of these other guys that are super high. You know, you end up with that, with, you know, that guy, Mitch, RJ, you know, Frank Ntilikina on an extension, hopefully. Mitch would also be on an extension. But then, like, you're still not committing a ton of money to your young core just yet. And you still get, like, one more year where, okay, now if this supposedly generational player comes in and can really transform you that next year, then you can hit the 2022 offseason actually with a good amount of cap space and a young core that is either tradable or straight up will just be so enticing that some, you know, some available star will say, hell yeah, I'll come play with Cade Cunningham. Like, he's the next, like, Luka or whatever. And, you know, you I think players understand now too the value of flexibility and team building to the point, yeah, where, like, which they would look at, yeah, they would look at a team with a clean cap sheet and a bunch of young talent and be like, this is gold. Like, I want to go there.
Which is, though, I think, as I will say, though, recent history, at least, I'm just not sure how much that happens. Meaning, I think LeBron went to LA because he wanted to live in LA, but not to really play with any of those young players. Cause, like, we saw, they ended up revamping the whole roster. I don't think, like, a star player right now is like, I need to go play in New Orleans because they got Zion. Like,
well, Jamie, you know, I'm gonna interrupt you, but look at the Kawhi Leonard example quickly. Like, the Clippers had that roster. They were that team that built it perfectly with Shai Gilgeous-Alexander and all the picks they had, all the assets they had. And Kawhi looked at that and said, he didn't say, oh, wait, I want to live in LA and this could sustain me for the next 10 years playing with all these young guys. He said, no, I want to win right now in my prime. Go trade everything for Paul George.
Yeah, right. So if you're going to use the players, right, to do the pick. And remember, in 2022, with the clean cap sheet, that depends. I mean, if Mitch progresses the way we want him to, you are going to have to pay him. And then, you know, again, if all these young players actually get good, even with Frank, you know, you're going to have to pay him. And I think part of the thing for me with Paul is, by paying him over these next 2 years, it sort of, in a way, like locks you into, like you're basically saying, we're not ready to go and spend our cap space on a win now team. And all of our young players aren't making anything yet. So rather than spending that money on like the Bobby Portis, Taj Gibsons, like in recent iterations, we spend it on a useful player because we're not using a cap space anyways. And then to that same point, you're just 2 years out to, you know, being able to then turn your cap space around. But I mean, I get the point. Like, obviously, everyone knows you want to land in, and it's about getting lucky multiple times. You have to win the lottery, but you also have to win the lottery in a year a generational player is available. So if one of those lucky points is that we already know that, like we know next year is a generational draft, then, you know, it sort of makes sense that one to maximize, you know, your odds of coming through on the other side. So no, I definitely get that point. I just think that, you know, especially with the Knicks, it's always, it just seems to me, it's always about where the Knicks landed in the lottery as the reason why they haven't gotten good players, rather than they just haven't made good. If they each of these years, the last 3 years, and I mean, even if you include a Porzingis year where I think they made a good pick, if you just make the good pick where you are slotted, then you will be fine. I mean, they could have taken, I don't want to sound like this a national media idiot, but like they could have taken Donovan Mitchell or Bam or any of these guys, and they just didn't. And other teams have made those picks. And that's why the Knicks haven't been good, not just because they didn't have high lottery odds. And I guess it's more, maybe I'm just fighting that point. But it doesn't mean I don't understand the obvious value of in a top draft. If you end up getting one of those guys that can be like a franchise changing guy, like a Luka, like you said, you know, that obviously speeds up the process. So I definitely understand that point.
Yeah. I will say too, sorry, Garrett, I just wanted to add like one thing, like I really do get your point in the sense of adding Walt Perrin should hopefully start making these sort of things happen for the Knicks, because like the Jazz, I think, have been one of those sort of, just like the Nuggets. I don't know what it is about that like Rocky Mountain air out there, but like right. The Nuggets, the Jazz, you know, teams like them, the small market teams that really, they have to hit the draft because they're not going to get free agents. A lot of them have apparently put in tons and tons of great money into, you know, scouting and development and that sort of thing. And that's why they're able to keep things going like they do. You could say the same for the Spurs. Even the Warriors to a degree. I mean, like the Warriors, to your point, they drafted their superstars, you know, in lower spots, but they also drafted, you know, their complementary players almost exclusively like in the 20 to 30 range of the draft, if not later, for a number of years. So like, I think Perrin is going to make a big difference there too. And Perrin's not infallible either, you know, just like the Jazz record in the draft isn't completely, you know, clean. They've had, to your point, they had, you know, the Exum pick, which was so-so, you know, never really worked out for them. You know, they had the Trey Lyles pick, which wasn't fantastic. Like, they've had their misses, but the thing is that even the very best scout in the NBA, like, I've definitely gotten into a couple, like, arguments over this on Twitter before, because people are like, well, look at Perrin's record. Like, he drafted so-and-so. But people were, like, just giving him credit for Donovan Mitchell and Rudy Gobert. And it's like, okay, yeah, right. Okay, but what about all those undrafted players? Like, also, you're saying we're just giving him credit for, like, picking out arguably the two of the top three players in their 60-player draft? Like, I don't understand what the argument is at that point. Because the reality is, scouting in the NBA, if you hit on something like a third of your picks and they turn into, you know, good, competent, like long-standing NBA players, let alone stars, then that's a successful draft record. You know, that's not like something to turn your nose up at and be like, oh, he only hit on a third. It's like, yeah, that means one out of every 3 years you're getting a really good player out of the draft. And other, you know, the thing with Perrin too is that, and granted, I understand he wasn't 100% of the scouting operation with the Jazz, like, but he was a major cog of it. You know, he found so many great undrafted players too, which was something that the Knicks have been fairly good at as well. Depending on your opinions on like Trier and Kadeem Allen and, you know, guys that are, I guess Allen was a second round pick, wasn't he? Or was he undrafted? I don't know. I forget. But guys like that, you know, taking guys off the heap, you know, and turning them into decent players has been something that the Knicks have been semi good at, but I think could get a lot better at under Perrin, who's found guys like Royce O'Neal and Georges Niang and, you know, guys like that that were more or less on the scrap heap that are now like contributors for the Utah Jazz, who are a perennial playoff team. So, yeah, I certainly see your part of the argument as well. I think if the Knicks could find some sort of happy balance between the two, that would probably
be which I guess we're saying Van Fleet, I guess, is what we're saying is maybe that happy balance. But, you know, I think one point that we didn't raise at all. And then, Gavin, I wanted you to jump in because I know you had something to say there too. But quickly, I think the point we didn't raise at all in that 2-hour marathon I had with Schwinn was about this unique year this next season will be and how maybe, like you said, I think that's a good point that you might have to look at it a little differently because I don't know, like, do you have to take like different just risk assessments in terms of, you know, is it possible the season gets interrupted again? Are players going to be willing to play in like another type of like bubble situation in a postseason? Does that not happen? Like, there's so much uncertainty that you could argue, you know, investing in that year, even independent of lottery odds, anything, just investing, you know, roster moves where you're even trading assets potentially, you know, it just isn't wise in a season that has so much uncertainty.
Just a reminder, today's show is brought to you by Built Bar, which, if you have not heard, is the best tasting protein bar ever. And it's new and improved. You know, Built Bar took a little time, went to the lab, just like the Knicks are this week, you know, with working on their skills in basketball. Built Bar, you know, took a little time off and said, we're going to make this bar even better. We're going to come back and, you know, knock people's socks off. And they did just that. They came back with 18, I believe now 19 amazing flavors. And because they just added a new one for fall, which as a big pumpkin person, I am very into. They have a pumpkin chocolate chip cookie flavor, which is extremely appealing to my pumpkin spice sensibilities. On top of that, they have 6 other brand new flavors: caramel brownie, cookies and cream, cherry barcia, lemon almond cheesecake, carrot cake, and apple almond crisp. And that goes along with 12 original flavors, including peanut butter, mint brownie, double chocolate, orange, and toffee almond that you may have already had and loved. Every single Built Bar is covered in 100% natural chocolate. None of the waxy crap that you find on some of the other brands. And they're soft and easy to chew, which also you don't find too often in the protein bar space. I find that, you know, most other protein bars either are kind of chalky and just generally not fun. It kind of just tastes like you took your protein powder and just like dumped a scoop in your mouth. Or they just taste like they're full of fillers and Rice Krispie crap. And it's just generally not a joy to eat. Built Bar is totally different. It's like eating a kind of caramely candy bar or like a denser Three Musketeers, something of that nature. Extremely good. And it gives you that real experience of eating a candy bar. On top of it, they're great for you if you're a health conscious person. And if you're looking to, you know, lose weight or just trying to have a great protein boost into your day, they're perfect for that. For example, the peanut butter bar has 19 grams of protein combined against only 180 calories, 5 grams of sugar, and 5 grams of net carbs. And then if you go with a nut-free flavor, which, by the way, are all prepared in nut-free facilities, say the cookies and cream, you get 17 grams of protein against only 130 calories, 4 grams of sugar, and 4 grams of net carbs. So, like, go look at any other protein bar. I really don't think you're going to find anything better than that as far as that ratio of protein to calories and the amazing flavor that you get with Built Bars that you don't get anywhere else. So if you're interested in picking some up for yourself, go to BuiltBar.com and use promo code LOCKEDON and you'll get $10 off your next order. Again, use promo code LOCKEDON for $10 off at BuiltBar.com.
Yeah, I'm in agreement with that. And I think what I'm going to distill from this whole conversation and sort of the big picture team building aspect, and I guess, JB, this is essentially the thesis of your article. I mean, you go through it. The only commonality in the great teams in the NBA is great management and to some degree luck. Like even with the Dallas Mavericks, like it took an incredible amount of luck for them to get Luka Doncic, and a team in Phoenix who literally employed the Slovenian national head coach, Igor Kokoskov, I might have butchered his last name, as their head coach. And they decided that they were like, they looked at him and they were like, nope, we'll take DeAndre Ayton. The Kings looked at him and said, nope, we're going to take Marvin Bagley. And the Hawks said, we think Luka's amazing, but we think Trae Young's going to be just as good. So we'll take a first round pick next year. And Dallas, who's like a great organization, like by and large, but struggled for a long time post their championship. Like it took luck for them to get Luka. And then I look at a team like Philadelphia, who you guys were just talking about. And I was thinking, like, I don't think they did anything wrong strategically. Like, I think Sam Hinkie absolutely had the right idea. Like he saw that the most direct way to them winning a championship was tanking aggressively, because even compared to the Knicks now, they really had nothing going on when he first took over. And in doing so, and I think if Hinkie had been allowed to finish his vision, like Philly might have won a title this year, they might have won a title last year. They just so badly like butchered some of the tangential moves, and they wasted this incredible advantage they built up after years of suffering by trading away all the wrong guys. And like the Tobias Harris trade like made no sense. The contract they signed Harris to made no sense, letting Jimmy Butler get away when arguably they were one like Kawhi Leonard like fluke shot or a little bit better health from Joel Embiid away from winning a title last year. And then they let Butler get away and they replaced him with Horford. So they did everything right. And then thanks to just like horrible luck, and like even you can go like just looking back through the circumstances surrounding Philly. Like I was just listening to Yaron Weitzman on the Low Post, and he was going into it. It's incredible like how much of an opportunity they squandered to just be the preeminent franchise in the NBA. You take Jason Tatum over Markelle Fultz, or Markelle Fultz turns into who he's expected to be, and again you're talking about Philly as a title team. And I say that to the point that I don't think there's anything inherently negative about tanking. I know, JB, you're making the argument that the risk of it is the opportunity cost of not building up credence as an organization and maybe stalling out the development of your young players unnecessarily when you can get guys later in the draft. My point would be that really the only thing that matters at the end of the day is how smart your management is. And Alex, to what you said, that doesn't mean hitting on every single pick, but it means hitting on a higher proportion of them than the rest of the league and occasionally hitting some home runs, like what it seems like Miami did with Tyler Hero and Bam Adebayo, and then on the margins with someone like Duncan Robinson. What we know Utah did with both Donovan Mitchell and Rudy Gobert. At the end of the day, that's all that matters. Can you hit those home runs? And the fact of the matter is, you do have a better chance of hitting that home run with the fifth pick than the 13th pick, to go back to something you said earlier, JB. But if you have great management, you can have confidence in saying that, okay, but that marginal utility in having the fifth pick versus the 13th pick and the odds that I'll land Luka Doncic at 5 versus landing Bam Adebayo at 13, which we can all agree that makes a substantial difference in how you build your franchise. But if you're operating at the level Miami's at, you can say, wow, it'd be awesome to have Luka Doncic. We'd be set up to win 4 or 5 titles. But it doesn't necessarily kill us that we don't have it, because we're so good in every single area that just by slotting Bam Adebayo in there, it might be good enough for them to win a title this year. So that's a long-winded way of saying that at the end of the day, organizational competency is ultimately the only thing that matters in the NBA. The Knicks haven't had that for any sustained amount of time for 20 years. I'm a little bit more confident that they have some semblance of that now.
Yeah, no, and I guess the other thing too is the number of shots you get, right? And I think that's what is promising. I mean, we just saw, you know, as everyone knows, I've been pretty critical of Steve Mills, but I mean, let's face, and I know he might not have wanted to trade Morris at the end, but the fact is they signed Morris and then they're able to turn him into an extra pick. And the fact is now you have 3 picks in the top 38. So it's the relative difference between the 5th pick and the 8th pick, or the 3rd pick and 8th pick, but it's also how many shots are you taking where you can miss? So like they could have it out of these 3 picks, they could literally fall on their face on one of them if the other 2 work out. And the more shots you get, you know, the better opportunity, obviously, that you're going to hit on one of them, especially if you have a good scouting staff. And I think that's where, you know, again, in my view, it's how do you maximize your assets so that maybe if you have a guy that doesn't quite fit your competitive window or fit what you're doing, you can at least turn him into another pick, even if it's early second round. So you're taking another chance. And at the number of chances, I think, is another, you know, another way that you can sort of increase your odds of hitting, quote, the home run, because you're taking more swings. But, you know, and the last thing I'll say is I do think it is ironic. I mean, we're seeing Anthony Davis, who was the number one pick, and what year was that? 13, I think it was? 12? 13.
I think it was the 2012 draft.
2012, right.
2013 was the historically terrible one.
Yes, that was Anthony Bennett. And I was just kind of scrolling through the top picks, and it is ironic because, again, teams could pick different players. I mean, who knows who the Knicks would have picked if they're at the top of the board with Doncic there or whatever. But it is ironic when you start looking at all the number one picks since then. I mean, how many, you know, between with Fultz and with Ayton, even with Zion. I mean, I think people obviously have some questions with health and whatnot. I mean, Ben Simmons, you know, he's got to really be on the right team. You know, Towns is one, I think, if he was on, you know, had the right people around him. You know, Wiggins. It is just interesting how many drafts we now have where that top pick is not even the player. Where, you know, going, you know, over the last 7 years, I can guarantee you there have been talks of, okay, this guy is going to be the next big thing. I mean, I know Wiggins is a big deal on the cover of Sports Illustrated in high school. It's like, it is interesting though, how often, I guess I'm saying that even with the top pick, because Gavin, I think you're raising a good point. You got to get lucky over who teams above you pass on. But even with the top pick where you can kind of take the quote consensus number one, how in recent time, it's been several players that, I mean, Davis will get to the finals this year. How many of those guys from, obviously not Anthony Bennett, but from, you know, the rest of them will play on a finals team? There might not be any of them. There really might not be any of them. Even Patrick Ewing, the one time the Knicks won the lottery, 1985, they didn't get to the finals till 1994. They got good in 92. We know it took Jordan a while, and he wasn't a number one pick. But, you know, it's just, I guess, back to that point of, you know, when you're trying to build a team into a kind of a, quote, championship team, you know, I think it's different than just building a contending team. A contending team is one that goes to the playoffs, makes runs, and they're fun to watch. And I think you can do that just hitting on your picks in your spots, getting the franchise-changing player who, like, turns you into a, like, potential dynasty or makes you one of the top teams. It's just so hard to do. Even if you had the number one pick every single year for the past 6-7 years, you still probably would not have, you know, been able to find the right guy that would have put you in that position yet, which is hard to believe.
Yeah, I guess it's sort of like you could sort of look at the Cavs to your point. I mean, we were just talking about Bennett, but to that point, you could sort of look at the Cavs as like the case study on that, in that, you know, after LeBron left, they were gifted like what, 3 number one picks in 4 years or 5 years or something like that. And also, you know, in that same time frame, they had the one draft where they wound up with the number one and number four, which is where they took Kyrie and Tristan Thompson. And, you know, then of course they took Bennett, who was awful. They took Wiggins, who ultimately they traded for Kevin Love, who wound up getting them a championship with LeBron. But, you know, Wiggins himself has not really turned into much of anything. So there's definitely something to be said there. I will say, at least with the Doncic draft, I think that was one that's going to go down as one of those, like, head scratchers forever. Like the Jordan draft, you could at least say, okay, Hakeem had a hell of a career, won, you know, a couple titles. That was justifiable. I don't think that we're ever going to look at the Doncic draft. I mean, maybe DeAndre Ayton, you know, along with Devin Booker, makes some deep playoff runs or something at some point. But, like, I think the Doncic draft is just one of those that we're going to look at forever as just being one of those, like, Jordan-level blunders where you're like, except for maybe even more, because I feel like for most of the year, almost everybody that you talk to about the draft that, like, knew their shit was like, Doncic just can't miss. You cannot not take him number one. You know, I'm sorry. I don't care how you feel about DeAndre Ayton or, you know, if he's local to Phoenix or whatever, like you cannot pass on him and, you know, not take Doncic. And what did they do but do that? But
as Suns fan, you're just stabbing me in the heart right now, Alex. I get enough of it with the Knicks.
yeah, I know your secondary like college age team, the Suns. It's I mean, at least they're good now, sort of. Yeah. At least they were fun.
I go to sleep at night dreaming about what Booker and Luka would have looked like together. But that's neither here nor there.
Yeah, I did want to. I feel like this nice little quote unquote last point of the show that we were just going to talk real quick about Chris Paul has turned into this whole team building thing. I want to end on sort of a more lighthearted note, and that is the ascension in a single day of Kenny Wooten to becoming like basically the king of Knicks Twitter. Maybe I'm slightly biased because he retweeted my tweet about like I just like put a video of him and he thought it was cool, so he retweeted it. But I've never seen, and I mean Frank, to be fair, is probably like the only other guy that I've ever seen interact with like the fan base like this, where he went through and like personally thanked like 50 people on his birthday for wishing him a happy birthday and like, you know, wrote out nice little thank yous to everybody. But like Kenny Wooten, the last few days has just decided like I'm logging on to Twitter and like I'm just gonna talk to people and shit, and this is gonna be fun. And he's like, some of his hits from today. Well, actually, I guess we'll start with the one from yesterday. Part of the Knicks. That was great. Today, he says, I see myself learning a lot from the staff. He went full Mark Berman and said, I wasn't going to say anything at first, but I really don't like how they did my guy RJ. And then, you know, the shrug emoji. Then someone came at someone in his replies where the person was saying, like, people don't put respect on the name of the Knicks. This person goes, this is going to sound like I'm being a dick, but y'all ain't earn any respect. Wooten quotes him and says, Google highest valued NBA team, take a nap, then delete this. and then retweeted a friend of the show and Strickland member, Jeremy Cohen, who tweeted out a meme that was like the soldier meme where it's like the soldier that's like on fire and getting stabbed and shot and everything, like protecting someone in their bed. And it was, you know, basically saying that like Kenny Wooten is the new like Twitter human shield of the Knicks. And he quote tweeted that and said that it's his new favorite tweet. So on top of that, it was also just like talking to people in replies. I looked through like all the replies to like his tweets too, and like he's liking everybody's posts and whatever, and clearly people are getting like a huge kick out of the fact that like they have this level of accessibility with Kenny Wooten. So I just wanted to give him a shout out to end this show.
Yeah, no, it's really, if you think about it, it's like if you are a young, like borderline I guess he's not borderline rotation because he's going to be a two-way player, but like just a young up-and-coming player, I'll call it on the Knicks. He's like laying the foundation of how to work PR. Go on Twitter, just interact with people, figure out like some of the things that Knicks fans like to talk about, quote tweet a couple of the bloggers, and you're going to build up like, so like, you know, you're going to build up such like an underground following that's going to help, you know, make your case, where I guarantee you that Knicks fans now this season are going to be very boisterous on Twitter about Wooten deserves a chance. Like all, like, I just think it's brilliant, really.
I think that Kenny Wooten is going to be, to Knicks fans, what Enes Kanter thought he was to Knicks fans.
Yes, which, that's the perfect way of putting it.
He's going to be like the people's champion that's very active on social media, that everybody loves, that if people, I could literally see, I mean, on days when he's active with the Knicks, I could see like bringing Wooten chants breaking out at the Garden if we're able to have fans next season, which is obviously a big if, unfortunately. But yeah, I don't know. It struck me like it put a big smile on my face to see the last couple of days, because I think it's very cool. Like, I mean, I've been in the point where, you know, lucky enough to be in the point of having like press level access to some of these players, but even that access, a lot of them still are pretty closed off to people. And, you know, it's like, you can ask them questions and stuff, but ultimately they're like, once it's time to clock out, they're like, okay, I'm out of here. Like, you know, I've said my piece and that's it. And I'm ready to rock and, you know, go home and whatever and not deal with this shit anymore. And meanwhile, it seems like Kenny, at least for the last few days, has just sort of made it a priority to be like, yeah, I'm going to interact with some people. And he's been really funny on Twitter too, because he deactivated for a minute. And then when he came back, he was straight up like, I feel like I don't know how to use Twitter, right? But clearly, over the last like week or two, he has figured it right on out.
I think you guys should try to get him to write for the Strickland.
We should just try to get him to come on Locked On Knicks. Maybe throwing out a little inside info, but I was thinking about he's got his DMs open.
I was looking at that before the show, and I saw he retweeted you. I was gonna say right as we finished, I was like, you should just message him.
Yeah, why not? I mean, maybe that's our next show.
Yeah,
I guess we'll see. We're brainstorming show ideas live on air. So since we've reached this point of the show, JB, I think it's reached the time where we should probably ask you to promote anything that you want to promote and plug yourself in whatever way you want to end the show here.
Yeah, no, I think we can both promote, the Strickland. Actually, I should tell you, I was talking to someone the other day, and I'm like, did you see the new site, the Strickland? And he's like, no. And he's like, this is literally all of my favorite Knicks writers, and somehow, how did I miss this? Which made me kind of think, are you just not on Twitter? Because we do share it out pretty good. But if people don't somehow know, it's thestrick.land. And, I really think right now, that's the best place to go to just find, if you're a Knicks fan and you want beyond just, the quick hit pieces on the news, which obviously there hasn't been a lot of anyways, that's the place to go. So, happy to promote that. And then obviously Daily Knicks, if you do want more of the quick hit pieces, you can come to Daily Knicks where we will cover all of the rumors and latest news as well.
Yeah, you are, and I do not say this lightly, the aggregation king of Knicks news. And I still, to this day, have no idea how you're able to read, listen to, and absorb, and then tweet out and write articles about as much information as you do every day. So big salute to you publicly here, JB, for doing everything that you do on that things, because you make life a lot easier for the rest of us, I'll tell you that much.
Yeah, no, thank you. It's my wife would wish I didn't do it as much, but here I am.
Yeah. Well, some people just got the drive to be the best, and you've clearly taken your niche and run with it, and you've got it, man. you've totally changed the game as far as that's concerned. So, JB, thanks so much, man, for coming on. Thanks for taking so much time. I think we went from what was going to be a one-parter into a two-parter with that last long discussion there. So thanks so much for taking all the time, and hopefully we'll have you on again soon.
Yeah, thanks, guys. It was fun.